Devam Saraswati Vyasa Chaja Budhiraya text 26 of the chapter. King Yayati regains his youth. Canto 9, 18, 26 and 27. Vishvaspavartan Agyaya Pratyamika Vivakshitam Guru Purushadayam Murda Padayo Patitapati. King Vrishapava understood that Shukracharya was coming to chastise or curse him. Consequently, before Shukracharya came to his house, Vrishapava went out and fell down in the street at the feet of his guru and satisfied him, checking his wrath. text 27. Nara Madhyor Bhagavan Shishyam Vyachasta Bhagava. Kamosya Kriyatam Rajan Vairam Tyaktu Ihotsahe. Karina Manya Bhagavan Shishyam Vyakasta Bhagava Kamosya Kritmatam Rajam Dainam Tyaktu Vihautsai. Rala Madhyar Bhagavan Shisham Vyakasta Bhagava Kamosya Kriyatam Raja Vyam Jaktu Vyotsai. Rala Madhyar Bhagavan Kamosya Kriyatam Raja Kairam Yaktu Mahotsai. Lady Rada Zariya Bhagava Dishavya Kasta Bhagava Kamosya Kriyatam Raja I don't yak to be hotse. Raja Mugan Bhagavan. He shall yak us to Bhagavan. Tabos yak yatam Raja. I don't yak to be hotse. Dada Madhya Bhagavan Vishyavya Kasta Bhagavan Kabo Shakriyatam Rajan Dairam Yaktu Vihotse. Kala Ada, lasting only a few moments. Madhu, whose anger? Bhagawan, the most powerful. Chisyam, unto his disciple Vrishabhava. Yakasta said, Bhagava, Shukracharya, descendant of Bhrigu. Kama, desire. Asya, of this Devayani. Kriyatam, please fulfill. Rajan, O king. Na, not. Idam, this girl. Yaktub, to give up. Iha, in this world. Utsahe, I am able. Translation, the powerful Shukracharya was angry for a few moments, but upon being satisfied, he said to Vrishabhava, my dear king, kindly fulfill the desire of Devayani, for she is my daughter, and in this world I cannot give her up or neglect her. Purport by Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes a great personality like Shukracharya cannot neglect sons and daughters. The sons and daughters are by nature dependent on their father, and the father has affection for them. Although Shukracharya knew that the quarrel between Devayani and Samista was childish, as Devayani's father, he had to side with his daughter. He did not like to do this, but he was obliged to because of affection. He plainly admitted that although he should not have asked the king for mercy for his daughter, because of affection, he could not avoid doing so. So in the first verse, King Vrishabhava, very intelligent, he could understand that Shukracharya was coming to curse him or chastise him. So he immediately left his own house and offered obeisances, fell down right in the street. So in Vedic culture, Shukracharya could understand he's completely surrendered. This is a sign of like complete surrender. So Shukracharya, even though he was very angry, he was quickly pacified. So this act is very cultural. There's this higher culture that exists in the Vedic age. Now, I don't know if that would get someone to stop. If someone was angry at him, you fell down, he'd probably kick you in the head. But in a cultured civilization, one thing that is crossing my mind that when we talk about this Vedic culture, we're so devoid of it in the Kali Yuga. It's completely sacrificed. It doesn't exist almost anywhere. Even in India, there'll be somewhat, but even there, it doesn't exist very much. What to speak of America? Sometimes I think someone tells a story, they asked Mahatma Gandhi what he thought about the culture of America. He said, yeah, it would be a good idea if they had some. There's other instances of this falling down. Stop the anger. Lord Balaram was going to drag the whole city of Hastinapur. He was so mad at them for disrespecting Krishna, and of course himself, but mostly for disrespecting Krishna. And they could understand that they were in big trouble, so they all fell down at Balaram's lotus feet, and that checked his anger there. There are other instances too of that, but I can't think of it right now. There's some other instances of that. And they fall down at someone's lotus feet just to get them to stop their anger. What's that? Oh, yes, Durvasa surrendered. But Ambarish wasn't even mad at him. Ambarish thought it was his fault. But in this case, Shukracharya definitely wasn't thinking it was his fault. He was mad at Rishabhava. He was going to... Rishabhava was worried, too, about his own material situation. So that's for later verses, but... And Shukracharya was also, he didn't really want to have to do that, but he was forced to out of his affection for his daughter. So the householders, they had to make sure their sons and daughters were properly situated before they would leave the home. In the Vedic culture, of course, that's unknown in the Western world too, that householders would leave home at 50 years of age. And they'd take the wife, they'd go on a prost. But ideally, they were married at 25 and the wife was younger. So the children would be grown by then. And then they'd spend some time traveling to all the holy places. And then when the man was fully confident that he could take the sannyas order, he would take sannyas, and the mother would go back to the family home and instruct the younger grandchildren and her in this Krishna consciousness, because she also had become very, very elevated by doing penance and austerity with her husband, going to all the holy places. So she had, it was lots for the children to learn from such personalities. And that way they would pass their days and everyone would be properly spiritually situated. Well, we were talking yesterday to one devotee, so trying to get everyone properly situated. He's already about 60. And you know, when they're properly situated, maybe it'll be 70, 80, who knows when people will be properly situated in the Kali Yuga. So it's very hard to institute this Vedic culture, this Kali Yuga age. But we have to try the best we can. Prabhupada wanted us to wanted us to surrender. So Prabhupada, he had his sons too, but he had his family. But he left everything and at the proper age. He was 58 when he took sannyas. And he had the order of his spiritual master. And good thing he didn't deviate from that order. Good thing for us. Otherwise, without Srila Prabhupada, of course, we know that we know ISKCON, and we know Hare Krishna movement. So Prabhupada left his family, but then he He made so many more nice sons and daughters by spiritual instruction. At one time he said, they are better because they are more surrendered to his order. So Prabhupada gave up everything to try and help this world. The world is completely lost. There's no spiritual knowledge. There's no way of gaining spiritual knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada took this message, this powerful message of the Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya, and he took it to the Western world on the order of a spiritual master, but he also understood that the Western culture is being adopted all over the Earth planet. The United States is like the powerful force, and everyone is following in those footsteps. So Prabhupada, when he first came, for a year he was preaching and trying to understand this Western mentality. And then gradually, as he understood everything, he began to institute the rules and regulations that the Westerners could follow. But the whole Earth planet is following the Westerners. That's why he brought the devotees back to India. And they were able to influence because they were so impressed that Westerners could take up their culture. They had like an inferiority complex because the Britishers had taken over the whole country. So this was very enlivening for them to see that now the young boys and girls of America and England were taking to this Krishna consciousness movement, and they became a little bit empowered by that. And now we can see that so many people are following Srila Prabhupada in all different parts of the world, but especially in India, so many are joining and, you know, pushing this movement in a big way. So Prabhupada, he studied this. He knows perfectly how to spread this Krishna consciousness in the Western culture. We can't really make up new things. This is the process. He minimized so many rules and regulations so that we could follow, we could get a foothold in this Krishna consciousness. And we really can't make up a new program for spreading Krishna consciousness. We have to remember, Prabhupada spread it all over the planet. Thousands and millions of people came to know about Krishna and took it up. And you know, we don't want to add or subtract. He knows how to do it, and we're sort of trying to help him. Prabhupada knew how to cut. Bhakti Siddhartha, they knew how to cut. They knew how to cut our false ego. The false ego needs major surgery. The false ego is very much contaminated. So the powerful spiritual master has to, now we may not be able to cut, but we can help. We can help by maybe passing the knife to the surgeon, or maybe wheeling the patient in, or maybe cooking foodstuffs for the patient. But eventually there has to be, well, you know, Prabhupada's books are there, so people will read them. And these books are very arranged so that we can gradually get rid of all our attachments and actually engage in real devotional service. And it starts from chanting. And it ends with chanting. This is the sadhana and the sadhya. Sadhana we practice, and then eventually we'll develop that love of God. But we can't make up a new process. The process has been given by the Parampara. And whenever Prabhupada changed anything, it was great forethought and great attention when he would change things slightly, adjust things slightly. He didn't do it on a whim. Even telling us with the chanting, they wanted him to drop it to Passax 16 rounds. Prabhupada said, no, 16 rounds, it has to be at least that much. And it's not very difficult. It takes 2 hours. So if we can't even do that, that is not acceptable. One devotee was saying, oh, I'm working so hard. Oh, Prabhupada didn't accept that. Generally, he didn't accept that. Maybe rare, but generally, he was expecting. I mean, 2 hours. Come on. We don't have 2 hours in the day? One Super Bowl game, you could chant 32 rounds. That's 4 hours. So, one time, said, can you chant 16 rounds? And this is another guru. He said, no, I can't. Okay, well, let's chant 8 rounds. But no, I can't. We'll chant 4 rounds. No, I can't. We'll chant 1 round. No, I can't. So when does it end, you know? Can't even chant 1 round. But you want to be a disciple? No, it doesn't work like that. You have to, the story is told, there's a Bhakti Sanatana story that this man falls into a well, and he's stuck in the well, and he's screaming to get out. Nobody's come. Finally, some gentleman comes and throws him a rope. And then all of a sudden, he's still screaming. What's the problem? He said, can you put my hands around the rope? He threw the rope, he's screaming, can you put my hands around the rope? So at least you have to make that effort. Even though it's impossible, but it's not impossible because Prabhupada said impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So it's not impossible to be Krishna conscious, but at least you have to grab the rope and assist. You have to make that humble attempt to do it. Actually, you have to become enlivened and become determined to do it. You have to be determined to follow this process. So that brings us to a point I wanted to make. Arjuna was also saying that this process, Krishna was teaching the yoga process, and Arjuna was saying this is impossible to do. It seems to control the mind is more difficult than controlling the raging wind. So Krishna agreed, but he said, by constant practice and detachment, you could do it. And in the next verse he says, this is my opinion. So it's Krishna's opinion that by constant practice, and in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, constant practice means 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day. And detachment means to give up all sense gratification. So this is impossible, right? No, it's not impossible. Krishna says, well, you can do it. Rigid, but then they use the term, I've seen it twice in my study. Rigid determination. And we all know the story about the little sparrow that wanted to drive up the ocean. So how is the sparrow going to, but he was determined. I want my eggs back, driving up the ocean. And then Garuda came when he saw that determination, then the ocean got a little bit afraid, because Garuda's Krishna's bird carrier. So he gave back the eggs and the sparrow was satisfied. So what's that? He had a higher taste too. But the higher taste may not come for a while. But the higher taste is there in the sense that at least you're not suffering like a dog trying to enjoy poison. So the happiness in the mode of passion later on becomes misery. And most people aren't even mode of passion. Mode of ignorance, the happiness doesn't even exist. You're suffering and you suffer more. You're suffering, you're drunk, you need to drink, then you suffer more. But you still think you're God. That's the thing. So I don't even know how do you think of it? Because they get puffed up, they're lying in the gutter, and they're thinking, I am more renounced than everybody. See, I don't need so much good facility. I am more renounced. So everyone is thinking they're the best. That's the illusion of the material world. I was reading today, they even go to the point where they think, I am God. The Prabhupada says, unceremoniously. In other words, there's no ceremony. No one gives any ceremony that says, I am God. No one cares for this God, you know, yes, God. It's ridiculous. Moktaram jagatabhasam sāvalokamaheshwaram suridam sāvamūtanam. So, what kind of God? They're not the friend of everyone. I mean, they may want, even if you want to be the friend of everyone, you have to die. As though you can't be there. Like I met this one lady one time. She was really old. She was happily married for like 40 or 50 years. They were happy. They were happy as anything together. And then one day, some guy threw a giant boulder down from an overpass, and it smashed right on the guy's car, and he died. So even if you were happy like that, it's inconceivable. But even then, you're still separated. So no one can be the best friend. But then there's an interesting about the Ram Dhammatabhasam, that Krishna is the enjoyer of all sacrifices. So this is very interesting, that if we do a sacrifice, it's meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Whatever austerity or sacrifice we do is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Not that we do some austerity and sacrifice and we display it to everyone how much I've chanted so many rounds, I've done this, I've done that. This is not for you to enjoy. It's something that you're doing for Krishna to enjoy. I mean, that's not really that subtle, but for us, it seems a little subtle. Sometimes they do Chaturmasya, they don't shave for like the whole thing. But actually, Prabhupada said we're clean shaved. I don't know, maybe it's all right. But it just seems like the only thing you know that they're doing is that they're doing it because they're growing face here, you know. So the spiritual master is giving us the process. He doesn't have to do it. He's done it already, but he's still doing it because actually the process is so nice, Shravana Kirtana Vishnu, for everyone. But sometimes you get a tutor for the child, so the child's so foolish, he thinks that, you know, the tutor's being paid. There's a story by Bhaktivedanta story, the tutor's being paid 15 rupees, this is in the old days, now he'd have to get more, but anyway, he was getting paid 15 rupees to tutor the child in math, and he was also getting 15 rupees for his maintenance. So the tutor was giving the child all these things to add up, sums to add up, and he was saying, why do I have to add these up? You're the one getting paid. But he said, no, you have to, if I add them up for you, you'll never learn. So later on, he was with his friends, and the tutor was in earshot, so he was talking very loud. He was saying, that rascal tutor, you know, I'm doing all his work. I'm adding up all the sums. I'm doing all the work for him. And he's getting 15 rupees and another 15 rupees, and I'm doing all the work. Saying, I can't bear it anymore, you know. So the purport is that the spiritual master, you know, the tutor, he already knows. He doesn't have to do it. But we have to learn. Thinking of that in that regard, that one story how one devotee didn't pay obeisances when he walked into the room, and Prabhupada told him to pay obeisances. And then he apologized, and Prabhupada said, well, after all, it's just practice. So they're practicing. It's just like the spiritual master, he's always absorbed in Krishna. So whatever he's doing is an offering to Krishna. So one time Prabhupada went into some kitchen, and he was saying that something wasn't Sandesh, it was something else. And after a while, the Gardona said, finally she was arguing with him. And then she said, and anyway, that's bogey, you're not supposed to be eating it. And Prabhupada laughed and walked out, because he's not supposed to be eating it. Another interesting point is that this Bhoga Tyaga cycle probably explains in the Nectar of Devotion that the materialist experiences it. He even says, you know, you work hard all week and then you want to enjoy the weekend. And then you go back and you work hard. So the Tyaga is you're working hard. The Bhoga is that you want to enjoy. So this Bhoga Tyaga is going on. So we have to be careful that we don't think that we go from completely absorbed in bhoga and then we become completely advanced in tyaga. It isn't like that. You're just in a cycle for a while if you're not careful. We have to methodically go about our Krishna consciousness. Not that we go from completely absorbed in sense gratification, then we become an uttama adhikari. You know, that's not correct. This is incorrect. This is not how it works. One has to be very careful. This uttama adhikari, it's meant for very, very advanced devotees. Even the uttama adhikari, someone like Srila Prabhupada, when he preaches, he differentiates as the, your lovable, supreme lovable object is Krishna, and you make friends with the devotees, and you preach to the innocent, and the interested, like that, and you avoid the atheists or the demons. We can't think that we're going to not differentiate. This is foolishness. You have intelligence. You have to see the faults sometimes. You have to be critical. You have to complain about things. Prabhupada said, am I the only one not in the mode of ignorance? Nobody was seeing that there's some dirty, you know, some pigeon stool or something. So, I mean, you have to do it. That's just the way it is. So, of course, we can say, well, they have the, Prabhupada has the adhikara or Bhakti Siddhanta. But no, you have to understand that we also must come to a platform where we're seeing what's going on properly. Prabhupada criticized, one time there was somewhat big deviation in one of the temples. And Prabhupada criticized, I don't mind that the new devotees didn't say anything, but I'm very surprised that you senior devotees didn't say anything. He was chastising the senior devotees for not saying something and correcting. So, you know, you can't just think that, oh, I won't say anything, you know. Or sometimes you say, oh, I'm so insignificant. I'll just remain insignificant. Bhaktisiddhanta says that's another cheating thing if you think I'll just stay insignificant. That's another thing. You can't even just pretend. Of course, all these 26 qualities of the pure devotee, the advanced devotee, they develop naturally as we surrender to Krishna. You can't really try to develop one and not try to develop another. So sometimes people preach like that, and I guess it may have some validity. But all these qualities are very exalted. So just like the pure devotee is serious, he's also funny. If we try to be serious, we usually aren't funny. But if we try to be funny, we're usually not serious. But somehow or other, the pure devotee can do all these things. He can be humble, but he can also be bold. So why just try to be humble? Why don't we try to be bold? Go out bold, preach everyone Krishna consciousness. Which is better, you know? It's good to be humble, but it's also good to be bold. So these things, how will they develop? So they'll develop by the mercy of Krishna. That we're surrendering, he'll give us the adhikar to do what needs to be done in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's impossible. Krishna is arranging everything. So when we're surrendering, then he'll arrange that we can execute this Krishna consciousness mission. The living entity, he has the capacity to desire by his free will. We desire by our free will, whatever we want. So if we want to be Krishna conscious, that'll be there too. And desire, material desire, but desire is the subtle form of conditioning. So if we're desiring materially, we'll be conditioned materially. But if we're desiring spiritually, we'll be conditioned spiritually. That is mind. If you train the mind, one time we would say that you have to beat it with a shoe and a stick, but actually, that's just general. Bhakti Siddhanta gave the exact instruction. It's 100 times in the morning with a shoe, and 100 times in the evening with a stick. I thought you could just do either, but there's actual. Bhakti Siddhanta also said one thing in a lecture. I don't think too many people heard it. But he said, you have to grab the mind by the throat. You have to grab the mind by the throat. The mind's a rascal. Sometimes you have to chastise it. But it's love. You know, it's like tough love, just like the child. The parent thing, oh, we'll let him do whatever he wants, you know. It doesn't work. You have to discipline him. Otherwise, you have a big problem. There was one auntie one time. The child lost its parents, so the auntie took the child in. Prabhupada tells the story. But anyway, the auntie took the child in, and she wasn't very strict with him. And when he would lie, she'd just laugh, let him get away with it. If he took something from a neighbor's house, she'd say, maybe return something, but it wasn't a big deal. So he's going on like that. But later on, he started stealing a lot more. One day he robbed the bank, and then he got caught. Well, he killed someone, and then he got caught. So he went to jail, and he was going to hang. He was going to die from his criminal activities. He was going to have to die. So his auntie was visiting him, and he went to the, he was talking with her. So he wanted to tell, he said, I want to tell you a secret. I want to whisper it to you. I don't want anyone else to hear. Can you put your ear closer? So she put her ear close where he just grabbed it with his tooth and he bit her ear off. And, you know, what was that? So he explained, I did that because if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here now. If you would have corrected me a long time ago, I wouldn't have done all these other things. So because of you, I'm losing my life. So you're losing your ear. And that brings another point, that the man who just bit her ear off, he's also spirit soul part of Krishna. Everyone's spirit soul part of Krishna. And we can see what the spirit soul part of Krishna do in this material world. So we should be a little bit afraid of Maya. Maya is really, Prabhupada said that you should be afraid of Maya. Maya, if you're surrendering to Krishna, she'll help. Like, we're declaring war against Maya. That's like the sparrow. It's like the sparrow trying to drain the ocean. We're declaring war against Maya. How can we defeat Maya? She's the total material energy. But Krishna can call her off. That's the thing. Maya's actually happy to see a devotee. She's part of our sampradaya. If you'll recall, Thakur Haridas gave her initiation. So Maya's our god sister. And she wants us to go back to Godhead. Actually, all the acharyas, all the great devotees, everyone is rooting for us. Everyone is rooting for us to become pure devotees of the Lord. So we have a lot of people who are... Prabhupada didn't just bring himself, but he brought everyone along with him, all the acharyas. He introduced us to all these great personalities. So we're very, very fortunate. There's no one as fortunate as a devotee. There's no one as fortunate as someone trying to become a devotee. Even without a devotee, we're chanting. Do we have a Krishna conscious bank account? Who is as rich as a devotee? There's no one as rich as a devotee. Bill Gates is a pauper compared to the newest doctor that chanted us. Somebody's, that guy at Apple used to go walk across town and make prasad. What's his name? He's died. Steve Jobs used to walk across town. He was very poor, apparently. He couldn't afford university. He would sit in on the classes. And then at the end of the week, he'd walk across town to take prasad. This is directly from him. He gave a lecture to a graduating class. He never graduated. He never went to college, but he gave a lecture just recently to a graduating class. So he told them that he would walk across the town to get a meal at the Hare Krishna temple. He said that was the best meal of the week for him. He said it was wonderful. He said it was wonderful. I love the Hare Krishnas. I don't know. I think he actually helps us a lot by contributing to the Indians, give us donations, and he doubles the donation if you give some donation. And Apple will double it. So in a lot of ways, that's how a lot of the money for the Polish tour. I mean, I don't know when he leaves his body whether he's going to throw the devotees a few billion, but he liked the prasadam a lot. He thought it was fabulous. He said, I have never eaten so good in my life as the Hare Krishna prasadam. And he'd walk like 7 miles to get to the place. You'd think he'd be a little bit more, you know, he'd be attached. There's another big billionaire. My wife's brother-in-law. And he was just broke, but he was going to the L.A. temple, you know, because she was living there. And she gave him prasadam. And then he became a big billionaire. But I don't know whether they remember. They might forget. Tendencies forget. Tendencies think I do it. When you're broke, you think everything belongs to Krishna. But when you get a big inheritance, then you start thinking, wait, let's hold on here a second. One devotee was living completely renounced, practically living out of his van. But then as soon as he got money, he built some giant cathedral for himself. So that's the nature of the material world. It's easy to renounce. That's another story. The guy gets this bed. Somehow or other donated, or someone passed away, so he got the bed. So he's sleeping on the bed, but it really wasn't such a good bed. So the bed broke. So then the guy said, okay, I'm going to sleep on the floor now. I'm going to renounce the bed. But the bed broke. How could you renounce the bed? It broke already. There's so many stories like that in the Vedas. I got a lot more here, but we better end it. Are there any comments or questions? Additions? Okay, Madan Mohan first. Should we make Rob second?
In the beginning of the class, when you're talking about the respect and the falling down at the feet, I was thinking that sometimes you do that ahead of time instead of after the fact, you do it before the fact. Like when was it Arjuna, when he was incognito, he sent arrows to offer obeisances to Drona and everyone. So I was also thinking that devotees, a lot of times we offer obeisances and we bow down. I don't know if they do it anymore. It's a lot of times someone does something, they put like one hand over their chest or something, back obeisances. But it used to be that you would bow down and to the feet, to the floor.
You can remember that? You get a good memory.
I'm forgetting a lot of things. Anyway, so I was just thinking of what that means is that I'm accepting you as a person with a valid point of view. So they're in one sense, that he's acknowledging that other person with that you're doing what you have to do, I'm doing what I have to do, where everybody's doing what they have to do according to their destiny. So it's just sometimes you do it ahead of time instead of at the end. And we do it to cover all our bases in the morning, a bunch of kalpa-jukas. We offer bases at all the Vaishnavas just in case maybe we made an offense earlier.
Good point. Do we grow?
Earlier you mentioned about like changes, and we have to be very careful not to change what Prabhupada gave us.
Yeah.
Good point. But sometimes for some, they may be changing the process and they're not really so aware. But what I think is interesting is if sometimes we can bring examples, you know, like show some examples. I think one point you said about, like you said, 16 rungs, and some people were doing like 8 or 5 or something. That's, you know, of course that's one example. But there might be other examples you're aware of. If you could bring up a few, that's good for the audience, because a lot of people are listening to and they can become more aware of it.
What things have changed? Well, I'm giving a seminar next week, and I'll have a whole bunch. It'll be $200 a person if you want to learn. I don't know why. Making a joke, yeah. That's just a joke. Don't come to a lodge with us. We're giving, actually, there's lots of people who listen to this. One time at the festival last year at the installation, some girl, she said, oh, Kripa Sindhu. And I was thinking, oh, my God, she knows my name, and I don't remember her at all. But the way she knew me is she listens to the classes in Boston. She listens to all our classes here, so she knew the different speakers. It's interesting that there's so many possible people listening. I mean, yes, Divyanga Prabhu.
I just wanted to share this. The Vaisheshika Prabhu called me last night, and he went to Potomac for a 3-day book distribution festival, and they went door to door, and then and that was nice. They had successful Sankirtan. But the most amazing thing was he gave the Sunday feast lecture, and when he gave the lecture, he put a couple of sets of books up there, and he told all the devotees to buy the books, and he goes, guess how many sets I sold? 38. Vaish sat there and gave a class for 45 minutes, and he sold 38 sets of books. He said he collected $6,000. I just wanted to throw that in. The purity.
Vaish Shake is definitely the bad.
Well, purity is the force, and as far as not changing things, Vaish is old school. He's into hearing and chanting and distributing Prasadam and books, and that's it. You know, Harinam, book distribution, Prasadam distribution. And if you follow that, I mean, they fly them around now to different temples because they're all trying to get inspired. Toronto's doing huge. They just got a new quota of 35,000 books they're going to distribute. Potomac took a quota of, I think, 20,000. It's just amazing how when devotees that are plugged in to Prabhupada, because purity is the force, that anything can happen. I mean, I've sold a couple of sets of books, but I never sat there and sold 38 sets of books. Had to share that.
Pretty mystical. Yeah, Krishna can do anything. By the desire of the living entity, he's fulfilling, you know, Vaisheshika's desire more than you can even imagine. Prabhupada's father used to say, Krishna has 10 arms. And if he wants to take from you, how can you stop him? And if he wants to give from you, how can you accept as much as he can give? Prabhupada would tell that story. Okay, I'll go to shoot Prabhupada in English.